Hi everyone, and welcome to What Is Pod May Never Die. I'm Caitlin Mannering, and with me today is my lovely co-host, John Block.
Hello.
And our guest, Devin Schmidt.
Hello.
We're going to be talking about episode 5 of season 7 of Game of Thrones, which is called Eastwatch. Obviously, not very appropriately named for what happens.
Might as well be called not Eastwatch.
Yeah, yikes. We'll get to that later. But we're just going to give you a little recap of the episode to start. So, we start the episode with Jaime and Bronn kind of coughing, coming out of the water. They're coming out extremely far away from where the battle happens. You kind of see the smoke and stuff in the distance. How did they swim so far away from the battle in Jaime's, like, extremely heavy armor? I have no idea, honestly. If anyone has any ideas, please let us know.
My idea is that it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. It really seemed like with the last episode, they, like, showed Jaime drowning in, like, a realistic way where it's, like, you are wearing, like, dozens of pounds of heavy metal and, like, you're gonna sink like a stone. It's not really easy, A, to, like... I guess Bronn, it makes sense, because he's not wearing a lot of
armor. Yeah, Bronn, it makes sense.
Fine. But, like, for him to carry, like, Jaime with all that in the water that far makes absolutely no sense.
I think it would have at least made me feel better if Jaime didn't have his armor, like, coming out of the water this time. Then I would kind of at least been like, oh, like, okay.
Bronn, like, took it off or something.
Sure.
I don't know.
No, it's fine. We'll get over it. They decide to go back to King's Landing because Jaime, of course, has to tell Cersei.
Also, like, Bronn keeps asking for that castle. He fucking deserves it.
He's
saved Jaime's life, like, 8 times now.
Yeah. Did Jaime say, too, was he like, you almost killed me or something to Bronn?
He was like, yeah, you could from tackling him into the water.
Oh.
He's like, what? I say fucking thank you.
Yeah.
Come on. That guy literally did the impossible and dragged you like a mile in water with armor.
God, it's okay. Bronn deserves a lot. We all can acknowledge that, I think.
Yeah.
Then we switch back to the battlefield, and Tyrion is just kind of walking amongst the ashes of all the Lannister forces. And it's pretty horrifying. It's pretty bad. Dany kind of comes out above all the Lannister forces that are still alive and says they can either bend the knee to her or they can die. Which, classic Dany, there is no in-between at all.
I like the irony of her speech being like, yeah, I'm trying to change, you know, I'm not like the Cersei Lannisters in the world. I'm trying to be nice and have like a realm for the people. So with that in mind, serve me or die. It was just like, you clearly don't understand what you're saying if, like, that's the method you're taking to implement it.
You definitely see a departure here where Dany before is ruling through love, you know, like, in Meereen, the people loved her there, but now she's just kind of ruled, like, where the people fear her, and that's why they're following her, and not for all the things that...
Yeah, that's true. She did that's before. True. Because even if these people, like, if they are going to bend the knee, they're never going to, I don't know, see her as a fair, benevolent ruler, which is what I feel like she wants. Whatever. And then we have Randall Tarly, who does not kneel, very defiantly, of course, would expect nothing less. So Dany drags him out to be killed, and then we also have Dickon, Randall Tarly's son, who they kind of tried to get to know him better in the last episode, I feel like, to build up to this moment where he would die.
Yeah, I was really surprised that no one died in the last battle, and it became clear they were saving those guys for now.
Yeah. Tyrion kind of tries to get Dany to not have such a hard line, maybe send them to the wall or something, but I guess Randall Tarly does say that thing. He's like, you're not my queen, so you can't send me to the wall, which...
That's not really how it works.
Isn't, like...
No, I mean, because, like, there have been, like, rebellions before where people who on the losing side of the rebellion have been sent to the wall, even though, like, they wouldn't necessarily recognize the person as king, usually, or I guess hypothetically queen. So really what he's saying is, like, I don't recognize you even to the extent that I can take mercy from you, is, like, just kill me then.
Damn.
Which I guess for as much of an asshole as Randall is, he's kind of got that.
Yeah, that vibe.
That he's got the integrity to him, at least. Where, like, he's got his beliefs and he sticks to them.
I guess, even though he, like, switched over to Cersei's side. You know, I feel like he did. But then, before that, like, he was under the Tyrells, and Cersei killed the whole of House Tyrell, and he switched over.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, there's a little bit of hypocrisy there, but then also there was, I think, Jaime's argument of, like, you're kind of, you could also spin it, and I don't think, like, this totally holds up, but you could spin it as, like, Randall staying with Westeros and kind of the line of Westerosi rulers versus, like, Elena had switched to a foreign ruler,
mm-hmm.
Which I guess was enough to convince him. So I think to an extent, the integrity holds up, at least on, like, that small scale of that scene.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. Well, they get burned alive either way. Pretty brutal.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it is, too, like, Dany deciding not to take any prisoners.
I don't know.
It's a lot.
It's kind of a lot. I mean, it is, to be fair, similar to what Aegon the Conqueror did. Mm-hmm. He was like, bend the knee or die.
Yeah.
That was his method, and basically everyone bent the knee, and then certain people he killed.
Yeah.
So it worked for him, at least.
I guess.
Clearly, it's unnerving to Tyrion. I did also like the scene when Randall and Dickon are about to be burned alive, and, like, Randall, after Dickon Randall's like, no, Dickon just, like, bend the knee, and Dickon's like, I'm not gonna do it, and then Randall kind of, like, grabs Dickon's arm.
Oh, that was sad.
It was, like, a touching moment.
Yeah, that was.
Because, like, what was really sad is, like, it's so easy to forget that, like, Randall was such a dick to, like, his actual trueborn heir, Sam, because he wasn't, like, that, like, warrior type. But then also because when he had this son, like, if you didn't have Sam in the picture, Randall and Dickon would almost be, like, even more sympathetic than they are in that, like, tiny bit in that one scene.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because
so close.
It's like, oh, like, I love my son. Like, he's this kind of person who I really admire, and he's got these great, like, Dickon isn't, like, an amazing character. We don't see a ton of him, but, like, he's got somewhat honorable characteristics.
Yeah, he's admirable. And I think he is, too. It's like, he says he does, like, just bend the knee, I feel like, but he's still kind of proud, I feel like, Dickon doesn't.
Yeah. So, yeah, they get incinerated.
Yeah.
But everyone else bends the knee.
Yeah.
So
good for them.
Good for them. They got some Westerosi people back after losing all of them really quickly.
Oh, God. Yeah, and then back to King's Landing, which Jaime is miraculously back extremely quickly after coming out of that water.
They have to get through the water on the right side to be close to King's Landing and not get found by anyone and, like, walk,
like,
all the way there.
The hundreds of thousands of Dothraki who just, you know, yeah, whatever.
It's, yeah.
I'm just, did they find horses? That would be a little better, at least, than them walking.
Maybe.
To King's Landing.
Just... This isn't as bad as swimming through the water, by any means, but he's just like, oh, and now he's back there. Like, oh, he's out of the water, and he's back there. There's just a lot of there's a lot happening in between the scenes that, like, are things that maybe, that, like, usually require some explanation of how they occurred, and a lot of times we just don't get that.
Mm.
And this was probably one of the more minor cases, but, like, at this point, there's so many that you just kind of tend to notice them, I think.
Yeah, it's easy. Yeah, well, I guess Jaime fills in Cersei on what happened at the battle. He also tells her how Joffrey was not murdered by Tyrion, but by Olenna Tyrell. Cersei's pretty angry that she didn't die a more horrible death, and she's mad at Jaime for giving her just poison, but
she's
already dead.
She wanted that anyway, though.
Even when she didn't, Cersei
wanted you to have a horrible death.
More. She looked, sitting in that chair, too, like, clutching the arms of the chair. I was like, oh, man.
That must be, like, a kind of weird feeling for her to be, because she's talking about Tyrion before. Like, it comes up because she's, they mentioned Tyrion, and she's like, oh, like, how could you, like, do anything with Tyrion? He murdered our father and brother.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, it's a weird thing for her to be like, oh, he actually didn't do this horrible thing.
Yeah.
And she's obviously still going to hate him anyway,
mm-hmm.
no matter what, because she just hates him.
It was, too, because I feel like she obviously hated that he killed Tywin, too, but I think Joffrey was, like, the real... because she loved her children, and that really pushed her over
at that time, especially.
Yeah.
By the time we get to Tommen, it's kind of like, whatever.
Sorry. Yeah, but basically, Jaime says they cannot hope to win against Daenerys, but Cersei basically doesn't think Daenerys is going to let them live either way, so she's willing to fight till the end, which... wouldn't expect anything.
It
less.
Does make sense, to be fair.
Yeah.
Like, from Cersei's point of view, like, she's not... she doesn't get anything by giving up.
No. She's not gonna survive, otherwise.
Right. So, if I were in her situation, I guess I would try to fight it out, too. Even though her chances are very slim.
Yeah.
So that, at least... Cersei's made a lot of bad decisions, but I think that would make sense.
Mm.
But then we move to Dragonstone. Daenerys has returned on Drogon, and Jon is on the cliffs brooding as he does when Drogon kind of lands, goes up towards him, and snarling. But
yeah.
But Jon gets some nice pets in.
I thought Jon was gonna like touch his like teeth at first or something. Like he was just like reaching out. I was like, "What are you doing?" Yeah, I don't know. That's definitely like leading up to Jon. I feel like being one of the dragon riders.
I would not be surprised. I mean, he's got the dragon blood in him.
Yeah.
He is a Targaryen, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was a pretty cool moment to see. I think, like, I saw it coming, at least. I feel like, clearly, Jon being around dragons and him being a Targaryen, we were going to get at least a little bit of payoff before that those two were separated. I was kind of hoping it would be, initially, when the dragon was flying, I was like, oh, maybe that's Rhaegal, the one named after Rhaegar, who's Jon's dad.
Oh, yeah,
dead.
And was going to be, like, alone without Dany.
Right?
That's
kind of
what, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that would have been pretty cool, too. Because
that
would have
been, like, his.
Right? Because, like, Daenerys is obviously the one who's going to ride Drogon.
Yeah.
But there's two others who no one's riding them currently, and I feel like if Jon's going to ride one of them, it's going to be Rhaegal.
Yeah.
So that would have been pretty cool. But it was still cool to see him pet Drogon.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so Daenerys gets off of Drogon and goes up to Jon, and Drogon is just kind of like, oh, I'll, like, leave you two alone, and, like, goes away. It's like, even Drogon gets it.
God, yeah.
So they start talking, they're kind of just like, your new battle that I did.
That's right, yeah. She, like, vaguely was like, I have less enemies than I did before. It was like, okay. Why can't we tell John the details? But whatever.
Yeah. But then their conversation is interrupted by the return of Juan Jorah Mormont.
Wow.
Fresh off a nice treatment at the grayscale removal spa in Old Town. There's a nice scene of him coming up. Obviously, Jorah still enamored with Daenerys and like sees her and John together.
He's
being like, what's going on, guys?
For sure. There's some tension there.
There is some tension there. Jorah's a bit
uneasy
with it.
He really just, I don't know what he
You gotta give it
thinking.
Up. Give it up,
this
man.
This could work out.
It's not.
No, she's obviously not into it. We've gone over this so many
times.
Come
on.
Yeah.
But then we get a quick scene with Tyrion and Varys in the Dragonstone throne room.
Yeah.
Where there's kind of like, yeah, burning people is pretty bad.
I think, too, like, you're always thinking, you don't want Dany to be like her father, but there are always these similarities that you see, and I think Varys kind of pointed that out, too, because Tyrion obviously feels bad that she, like, killed all these people in this brutal way, but he's like, but it's not me, I'm only the hand of the king. And Varys kind of says that was the same way he felt when he was serving the Mad King. So,
right.
I think
there's a really good quote. I don't think it's in the show. I don't remember who says it. It might be Barristan in the books, where he's like Targaryen. When Targaryens are born, there's like a coin flip, and it's
yes!
like one side is greatness, and the other side is madness, and then you can kind of get like the two sides of the same coin thing, where like there's always a little bit of both to some extent, like of varying degrees in all Targaryens.
Yeah,
which I think is really interesting because like it applies, I think, to basically all the Targaryens you see to an extent. Even Jon, I think you can make the argument for, but especially Daenerys.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's always that like balance of like this person's like a great ruler and like very magnetic as a person and charismatic, but then they also do things that are kind of horrible and don't always understand. Yeah.
I think Tyrion is gonna have to, I don't know, like do something by the end of this season, because I think we're like building up, like he's seeing her do, and he hasn't really seen her do anything bad, at least. And I think he sees it on his own people, too, of Westeros.
Right. I think they're definitely setting it up for him to make a play of, like, kind of confronting Daenerys, but I don't know how that will turn out yet.
Yeah.
Because Daenerys, at this point in the season, seems pretty, like, hard set in her ways.
Yeah, but sometimes she's, like, totally not. I feel, you know, just later in this episode, too, with the whole bringing evidence to Cersei, she was just kind of like, okay. And sometimes she...
Yeah,
who
that's
knows?
True.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I guess because at this point, like, the only thing left for her to do is to burn King's Landing with the dragons.
Yeah, was she...
Which I feel like that's another step farther, which she's not willing to do at this point, at least.
Yeah.
Thank
God.
Yeah, that would be upsetting.
Yeah.
And then, so there we get a scene in the map room in Dragonstone with Davos and Jon and Daenerys and her advisors and Jorah now that he's back. With the kind of plan that you were mentioning to work with Cersei. Mm-hmm. 'Cause they get the letter from Sam, from Bran in Winterfell, that that Bran sees the Night King and his army marching towards Eastwatch. Yay! The name of the episode comes out. And so, I think Jon at this point is becoming more convincing. Daenerys is sufficiently enamored with him that she believes more of what he says.
She likes that little man bun.
And so they kind of devise a plan of, like, it will be best if we can get, you know, Daenerys to help, but then also Cersei to help. So, like, the idea is, like, oh, we can, like, stop this war to fight the war in the north against the greater enemy. And so the plan is, Tyrion is like, oh, I can probably convince Jaime. And then Davos is going to sneak him in with his smuggler skills. But then they need the white as evidence to show them. And Jorah's like, I'll do that. That seems sufficiently suicidal. I just got back. Time for me to go again.
I came back to serve you. I was like,
I think
you've been here for like 5 seconds.
Right? I think him seeing Danny and John really hit him. He was like, I'll come back and then it'll work out. It's not going to work out.
Nope.
Sorry, Jorah. And then John is like, oh, I have to go to Eastwatch also.
Yeah.
And then Daenerys looks so much like she's gonna cry.
She does! Yeah, it really did. Like, it zoomed in on her face and her eyes, I swear to God, were glistening. And I was like, stop that.
Yeah, no, come on. Relax.
Yeah.
Like, I get it, but, like, that's too much.
Yeah. It was too, I feel like, very, like, anticlimactic how John, like, found out that Bran and Arya were still alive. He's just like,
they're alive.
Oh, yeah. And she's like, I'm happy for you. And he's like, yeah, whatever. Gotta go.
When you've seen the Night King, it doesn't matter if your siblings are alive.
Yeah, well, whatever. So they decide to go. Dany's obviously sad that they're leaving. We get a nice little picture of a bunch of crows flying over the army of the dead. And it flashes back that it's Bran who sees this. So that's, like we said, he sent them the message to go. He also sends it to the Citadel, and kind of, I guess it's just, like, a group of the head, like,
it's just
maesters.
All the archmaesters chilling, having their nice conclave.
They definitely seem like assholes. They don't believe Bran's letter at all, and Sam kind of comes into the room and hears them talking.
I love how Sam is always around anything important that the maesters are doing.
Yeah, he does. He just starts yelling in the middle of their meeting, I feel like, at them. But understandably, I think they obviously
When you've
know.
Seen the Night King, you can yell at the archmaesters.
Yeah, you can't stop. It does seem like Professor Slughorn, what is his name in Game of Thrones, actually? I have no idea.
It's Archmaester, I don't even know.
Who even knows?
Archmaester something.
We'll just call him Slughorn for our purposes. I feel like I want so much more for him. He keeps thinking like he almost believes Sam, but then just is like, or it also could be a ploy by the Dragon Queen to move all the armies in the south, defending the south, to go up north, and then she can just take over. Which, yeah. Okay.
It's almost as if he said that just to get the approval of the other archmaesters. It's kind of like an echo chamber.
Bro.
Yeah.
Whoa! So relevant to modern society.
Yeah, so, I don't know. I guess Sam tries and just doesn't get anywhere with them. They just kind of start talking about a bunch of old, I don't know, ploys that they think happened to
Right, they're like, oh,
them.
Remember that one guy was like, oh, the Dragon guy's gonna get us.
Yeah, and Sam's just done with their shit, so he leaves that room. Then it goes to him and Gilly back at their house. Why are they living together? I'm still not sure.
So unclear.
Yeah, yeah, it's okay. They're both reading. And I guess Gilly at first, she's just reading some random book with a bunch of the maester wrote down how many steps were in the Citadel and all this random stuff. And Sam's really, like, his mind is in another place. He's really pissed off at all the other archmaesters. And he's not listening to what she's saying anymore. But probably the most important point of the episode, I think,
just
happens.
Sam's giving, like, that, like, you know when you're talking to your mom and she's not paying attention to you, and she's just like, mm-hmm,
yeah.
mm-hmm. But you, like, you kind of hear it in the tone that, like, no, she's not paying any attention. Sam's just doing that, and then Gilly just drops a fucking bomb.
Yeah, so, basically, she's just reading what this guy wrote, and she says, oh, like, what's an annulment? And Sam's just like, oh, like, yeah, it's when a lord, like, gets away from his lawful wife and whatever. And she's like, oh, yeah, it says here that he performed one for Rhaegar Targaryen in, was it Indoor? Like, it was, yeah, a secret annulment, I guess?
Yeah, it would have been secret.
Yeah, so basically, Jon is the rightful
Jon's
heir.
The rightful
right? Because we knew he was the child of Rhaegar and Lyanna, but there was no confirmation up to this point of whether that he was a bastard.
Exactly.
Or, like, what the deal was with that. And if Rhaegar's marriage to Elia Martell, which, by the way, poor her, she didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
But if that was annulled and then, like, he married Lyanna, then Jon would be the rightful heir to the throne.
Yeah, even ahead of Dany.
Ahead of Dany. So that was just a huge, huge piece of information, and Sam was just like,
Yeah, Sam was like, yep. And then he, like, launches into, like, his whole monologue about how...
He's like, Gilly, shut up.
Yeah.
I'm doing important things here.
They don't understand me.
Like, I don't need to know how many steps there are. I don't care how many shits the archer makes.
Yeah. And she obviously doesn't really know.
She doesn't understand, like,
she's
gravity of what she's saying.
She's from beyond the wall, so how is she supposed to know?
Exactly.
You know, it's okay, but yeah, most important piece of information in this episode. But basically, they decide to leave the Citadel. Sam decides to drop out of studying to become a maester, but he steals some scrolls before he leaves. And
yeah, one last look at the restriction section of the library.
Very, like, longing, like, the soaring music as he looks around the library.
Honestly. He's sad to leave. It's a cool place.
Yeah.
We're going to get so much less Harry Potter comparisons now.
Sad.
So many, I guess, fewer.
Fewer comparisons.
Yeah, so after Sam leaves, that's it for him in the Citadel. I assume he's going back.
Yeah, I doubt north. We won't go back there.
Probably not. No. Bye, Citadel.
Bye, Slughorn.
Bye. but so then let's move to Winterfell. We start out in Winterfell with another meeting in kind of the Great Hall in Winterfell, which there's so many. There's so many meetings.
I know.
They just have a daily meeting of, like, lift, because everyone in this room.
I feel like, you know, they were like, yeah, we couldn't use it in, like, the first few seasons because no one was at Winterfell. Like, none of the Starks were like, yeah, let's go. Let's use that all the time.
But it's not even, like, the, I feel like it's not even in, like, the big room with, like, it's not a throne, per se, but, like, the big chair where the head of House Stark, it's just,
true.
Like, the dining, it seems
it's
like the dining room, basically.
Yeah.
But so they're all there. And then all the lords are like, the king should have stayed in the north. He went south. Maybe we should have picked you to lead, Sansa. Which, like, how fickle are you guys?
I know.
It hasn't even been that long.
Yeah, obviously, she's amazing, and I love her, but I don't know. She's still so young. Like, Jon obviously already has experience remaining Lord Commander.
Yeah, I guess my issue with it isn't even so much that of, like, an issue of qualification between Sansa and Jon, as it is of, like, especially for the, like, the Vale, I get it, because, like, the guy, I think it was Lord Royce, was like, yeah, they came for her.
Yeah.
So it makes sense if they care more about her than Jon. But, like, the lords in the North, so recently, like, all were, like, king in the North to Jon.
Yeah!
And, like, I feel like the whole point of, like, people from the North is, like, they have this pride about them and, like, this hardiness about them where, like, you wouldn't expect them to be like, oh, like, he did something we didn't like, so let's immediately abandon him.
Yeah, they're supposed to be more loyal.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So that was weird for them to be so fickle about that.
But I do think, like, Sansa liked that for sure.
I think she did like it.
Oh, you wanted me?
But she does, to be fair, ultimately, like, no, like, Jon's still in charge.
Yeah.
Like, Jon's still the king of the North. So she's not letting it catch in her head so much that she is going to be like, okay, yeah, like, you want me to be in charge? So fair enough. I'm queen of the North now. Okay, it's done. But I think there is something there. And then Arya confronts her about it after the meeting, being like clearly you are recognizing the fact that, like, oh, if Jon doesn't come back, you're gonna be in charge. You're gonna be the leader of Winterfell and the ruler of the North.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to curry favor with these lords who are here, so that they'll support you, you know, when Jon is gone for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And she's kind of annoyed at that being pointed out, even though I think she recognizes that to an extent, at least, that is the case.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I think that's another instance. We saw it a bit last episode when Arya came back of, like, the tension between her and Sansa.
Yeah.
And I like that they're keeping that up.
Me too. I think, too, it even showed, again, how Arya's like, oh, let's just kill them if they're being disloyal.
Right,
and Sansa's like, that's not
no.
how this works.
Arya,
Yeah.
That's too much.
Yeah.
But speaking of Arya, she's doing some sleuthing around Winterfell,
mm-hmm.
spying on Littlefinger. I don't really know where she. It's probably pretty clear that he shouldn't be trusted. So she's checking it out, and he meets like a bunch of people who are like his spies or informants or whatever, talking to him, and she's kind of following around, witnessing that. And then he gets the people were talking about this about. This was, like, maybe the second episode of the season or something like that, when it's a scene in Winterfell where Maester Wolkin is, like, like, oh, Maester Luwin kept all these records of all the scrolls that came to Winterfell, and then Littlefinger kind of gives this look.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so people thought something was going to come of that, and it did, where Maester Wolkin kind of gives him this scroll. Credit to him, though. He at least is under the impression that Sansa is the one who asks for
it.
He's
not being shady.
Yeah, so credit to Maester Wolkin, because you know he's sworn an oath to be loyal to the ruler of where he's serving. Good for him for not breaking that oath.
Mm-hmm.
But Littlefinger gets that scroll, hides it in his room, and then leaves his room. But then Arya sees him. She goes into the room, gets the scroll. It looked to me like it was a scroll written by Sansa.
Yeah, no, it was. It had her name at the end.
Yeah. What scrolls would have Sansa written?
Yeah, we were trying to say that too. I literally have no idea, because it would be something she sent to Winterfell?
From King's Landing.
Yeah.
Potentially, or the Vale are the two places she's been. But yeah, I'm not really sure
what it could have been.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that's a tough one. But Arya steals it.
Yeah.
And then, as she leaves Littlefinger's room, who should be watching?
God damn it.
But Littlefinger. This is like the ultimate scheme off between Arya and Littlefinger.
I remember too, in like the trailer for this season, it showed that shot of Littlefinger like creepily like looking out from the shadows. And I was like, what is this motherfucker doing? I literally can't stand him.
Yeah,
he's just playing out all the possibilities.
Yeah,
all at once, you know.
All his enemies.
With the Littlefinger creepily, yes, the rest might have been a unique shot, but Littlefinger creepily describes every shot of the
True.
There's no Littlefinger not creepily. It just doesn't exist.
And do we think he knew, too? Like, he planted
it could
it
be.
On
it
purpose.
Could be. I wouldn't be shocked if it were a fake letter.
I feel like, too, especially since it's from Sansa, he's trying to, like, further, like,
that
wedge between them.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know what letter Sansa would have sent
that
would have been, like, super incriminating to him or anything like that. Clearly, like, because when she was in King's Landing, she sent some letters, but it was all at the behest of Cersei being like, oh, yeah, like, Rob bend the knee.
Yeah.
Like, things like that.
Yeah.
I could imagine that there were things like that. It did kind of seem like also in the, whatever, like, where you put sincerely or whatever, right before you sign your name, it was, like, your loving sister.
Oh.
So it could be, like, oh, something that, like, she fake wrote to Arya to kind of drive a wedge between them more. Which, because we were talking, I think, last episode about how Littlefinger was kind of looking for a weakness amongst the Starks and couldn't really find one.
Yeah. And this could be.
But he, like, so rather than trying to, like, influence one of them, he's trying to kind of create tension within them, which is something that he's been very good at, like creating tension between other people. Obviously, he did that in a major way between the Starks and Lannisters to kind of set everything off in a lot of ways. So he's always got something up his sleeve.
Scheming.
Don't count him out.
No, definitely not. When we go back to King's Landing, we get Davos and Tyrion coming up on their little boat that Davos has smuggled in to his usual area, apparently. He tells Tyrion which pathway to go on, and then Davos kind of goes in, like, the opposite direction and is like, I have my own things to do. Yeah. And then we kind of go to Jaime and Bronn going through the old, like, where all the, is that, like, just below King's Landing, where all the old dragon skulls are. And they're supposedly training, but I guess Bronn is actually leading him to meet up with Tyrion. And that's pretty... There's a lot of tension there.
Right. Because sure. obviously Jaime now has less of a grudge against Tyrion because he knows that he didn't kill Joffrey, but also Tyrion still killed Tywin.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Jaime, too, like, still feels guilty and angry because he let Tyrion go and he basically brought about, like, he played a part in his father dying.
Exactly, so yeah.
Tyrion, like, made him responsible for it.
You know what I was bummed by with this?
What?
So Bronn is the one who brings them together, but Bronn and Tyrion don't meet up. They don't say anything. I thought that same thing.
Do you think they had already seen each other before this, or?
I don't think so, because it seemed like Tyrion and Davos just got there.
Yeah, that's true.
So they probably sent some, I don't know how, maybe Varys did something to get in touch.
Because I liked their relationship a lot.
They had such good chemistry.
Best friends. And then we switch to Davos kind of wandering around Flea Bottom. We see some, like, swords being made and whatever. And I think I kind of knew then.
Yeah, you kind of knew when you saw that.
Yeah, I was like, oh, God. But, of course, we see Gendry again after all this time. When was that? The end of
season 3? I think season 3.
Yeah, okay. We do get that great line from Davos, wondering if Gendry was rowing all this time.
So, as, like, kind of cringy as that was and, like, pure fan service, I needed it. It was, for me to even buy Gendry being back, I needed that line. I put so much stock in the, like, fantastical idea of the last season, of the last shot of the show being Gendry rowing. I wanted that with all of my heart for that to be true, and now it won't happen. So, that line was, like, the tiny bit of, like, concession I needed to be like, we understand the rowing, go with it now.
I hated that line so much. It was just too much of a meme at this point. And I just could not take it seriously in the slightest.
Yeah, it was a lot for me, you know?
I understand that. Yeah. I don't disagree, but from a personal standpoint, I put so much stock in that rowing shot.
I guess.
I wanted it more than anything.
It does, since Davos was the one who helped him escape, though, from Melisandre, I guess Gendry has been waiting this whole time. I don't know. He seems like he's ready to go.
He's like ready to go. He doesn't really
right
like...
Oh, right now? Like, let's... Yeah, I mean, I'm ready.
To be fair to him, makes sense to not want to be, like, making weapons for the Lannisters.
Yeah. I'm confused why he went back.
Well, apparently Davos told him. He was like, safest place for you.
Right under the queen's eye.
Which, no.
No?
No, it's
definitely
not.
Everyone would remember you going back there.
Yeah, like, you worked... You went back to where you worked.
Yeah,
like,
and there's definitely
know you.
So much money, like, on his head. Like, yeah, they would gladly...
Also, like, you're getting older. Like, you're Robert Baratheon's son. He has some distinctive characteristics.
Yeah.
And, like, you look like him.
Yeah.
So...
The Warhammer definitely doesn't help.
Right?
No.
Although, when he brought that up, it was pretty awesome.
Yeah. It's like, of course... And we never got to see, like, Robert with the Warhammer.
That's true.
It's just, like, been, like,
see...
this, like, fabled, like, he was such a great warrior, like, with his hammer and stuff. So that was, like,
yeah,
it was cool.
Yeah, we only got fat Robert.
Yeah, fat, drunk Robert. Yeah, so then they go back to the boat, and they kind of, Davos was doing a pretty good job, I guess, not bargaining, but bribing these soldiers, the Gold Cloaks?
No. He did such
no.
a... That was so ridiculous. This is my like, weird nitpicking into the world of Game of Thrones that's so unnecessary, but 15 gold dragons is worth so much money. That is an incredible amount of money.
30 total.
30 total for both of them. That's just...
Yeah.
Even 5 gold dragons is, like, a lot of money. 15 gold dragons is, like... You can buy, like, armor for that much money. Like, a suit of armor, like a horse or something. And, like, just to bribe guards to look the other way. You're in silvers. Like, I don't even think one gold dragon should be necessary.
Oh, my. Yeah.
That bothered me from, like, a nitpicky... I'm into the nuances of the world
the
too much way.
The commerce of Westeros.
Yeah. It's like, honestly, a handful of bronze stars would have been enough for me. 15 gold dragons is outrageous.
Oh,
that's highway robbery. I would have told Gendry to get the Warhammer out right then with the ass for that.
Yeah, well, I guess then they want to see what's in the boat, and Gendry has literally, like, just put his Warhammer in the boat. And they're just building it up, like, these poor kind of stupid gold cloaks, you know, are
they're
just
going to
get
one.
It. Yeah, they're not going to survive. But, Davos has like a clever plan, like with his weird flip the crab, cloth over. Fermented crab,
fermented aphrodisiac what? Crab.
Yeah, that was bizarre, and it just like it was one of those things they've been doing this season that just like a weird thing that lasted like slightly too long.
Right?
Why
it's
are
like,
we wasting
cool,
time
yeah,
on this?
You were doing this funny thing to ease the tension
yeah.
of this very serious show.
Yeah.
Don't do it in a way that like kind of takes you out of it.
Exactly. It really did. It's okay. It's all right.
Yeah, but so they recognize Tyrion.
Yeah, so then, of course, like, right as they're actually, like, leaving, like, they were just gonna leave them alone, and Tyrion is, of course, coming down the path, and they recognize him. He's a dwarf, like, pretty, like, memorable scar.
Right?
Yeah, they know Cersei would
no
be them.
No fishhook
like,
is
so
giving
much.
You a scar all
no.
the way across your face, too.
Nope. So they come back, they're about to get him, and Gendry just, we see that Warhammer in use real quickly.
Real quick.
Yeah. That was intense, and Tyrion doesn't even really care who that is. He's just like, okay, he can fight. That's fine. Yeah, then we switch back to Jaime and Cersei still in King's Landing. Cersei knows, like, Jaime basically tells her that he has met with Tyrion and about the plan to kind of stop the fighting, to fight the greater evil, I guess. And Cersei basically already knows about this, and she looks so smug. But she also wonders if Jaime is going to punish Bronn, which is just, like, building up to something that I really don't like. Bronn, it's gotta get out now. I'm scared.
Right? Bronn? All right, Cersei, Bronn has done
so much
for
you. Yeah, for this family.
Like, just, there are so many more people
yeah.
to betray. Like, just kill other people. Bronn, like, you give
yeah.
him his castle,
like,
he'll help you
he'll
out.
Yeah, he'll be fine. Yeah. Her, like, evil smile. God. She needs to get out. But we get another bombshell that's, like, weird and we think is a lie when Cersei acknowledges that she's pregnant to Jaime. And he's like, oh, who will you say the father is? And she's like, oh, you, because she really does not care anymore, as we saw in the last episode with them. But we kind of were saying that we think that is a lie just to keep Jaime close till the bitter end.
Right. I think when she realizes Tyrion is back in the picture, like, having met with Jaime,
yeah.
she, like, becomes... Like, she knows that, like, obviously Jaime freed Tyrion, obviously, even though Cersei hates Tyrion,
mm-hmm.
Jaime doesn't, and actually likes him. To in some way, at least. And so I think she's trying to influence him to be on her side. Like, she's wary of him potentially going to Tyrion's side. And so she's like, if I'm pregnant, then he'll, with his
yeah,
kid,
oh, really?
He'll be on my side. So,
yeah.
I think we could be wrong, but I'm...
We're probably right.
Yeah, I think she's not really pregnant.
Yeah. She's pretty old at this point, I feel like, isn't she?
I don't know how old she is in the show.
Hard to say. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they embrace, and it's, like, kind of touching in a weird way until she's like, don't betray me again, Barry. Yeah.
No,
okay.
No.
Yeah, but I think that is foreshadowing, too. I really think he's gonna kill her in the end.
I think so.
Yeah.
I wouldn't... What if he finds out that she's not pregnant and lied to him about it, and that's what pushes him over the edge
to
do it.
Oh, man. That would be intense.
That would be a lot. I can
yeah.
see it happening,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, I can see that happening. Yeah.
So we... Davos, quickly in King's Landing, quickly back to Dragonstone.
Yeah.
he's kind of chatting to Gendry, being like, all right, just, you're some random guy.
Yeah.
You're with us now. And he's like, ah, that's cool. And he gets up to Jon Snow. He's like, I'm Gendry. I'm Robert Baratheon's bastard. And Gavis is like, fuck
yeah,
you.
He's like, he was not supposed to say that. What?
But then I feel like this was pretty cool. This nice conversation between Jon and Gendry.
Mm-hmm.
The sons, or in Jon's case, presumably the son. I mean, as far as, like, who he was raised by, the son, and then who he takes after a lot, the son of Ned, and then Gendry, the son of Robert, who I think he shares a lot of similarities to. And obviously Ned and Robert, I mean, like, you get that in season one of, like, that, even though, like, they don't always get along in the season,
yeah.
they're clearly very close friends.
Yeah,
and then obviously there's, like, the stories of them, like, like fighting in their rebellion together and just, like, growing up together. So it's really cool to see the sort of reincarnation of that with Gendry and Jon, and there was sort of like an instant chemistry between them where, like, they got along pretty quick,
yeah.
and Davos was like, I'm not.
He was just kind of out of that. Like,
yeah. So then Tyrion and Jorah, we go to them.
Well, I did kind of forget that they had that whole season together.
Right, they had a whole thing of, like, Jaime captures Tyrion and Volantis and then travels with him.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, yeah, that was pretty, it was like, oh, yeah, like, this is something that totally happened and was, like, a big part of the show. So it was cool to see them reunite. Tyrion gives him, like, some random coin that he got from a slaver, I was like, this is something that happened, I guess.
All right. No, it was, like, remember, too, like, when they were being sold and then... They gave, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was a nice thing.
It was supposed to be more touching than it actually was.
I think so.
But I think they do have, like, a lot of respect.
It was cool to see them reunite and be like, like, here are two characters who haven't seen each other in a while. This is really, like, the season of reunions.
Yeah.
Because, like, so many people who haven't seen each other are seeing... If Gendry's back, like, everybody's
back.
Yeah, but... So they hug it out. I don't think they actually hug.
No.
But... metaphorically, they hug it out.
Yeah.
So Daenerys is, like, coming up, like, holding Jorah's hands as he leaves. It's like, Daenerys, like, he's clearly got some issues with, like, his affection towards you.
She's,
like,
gotta know.
Yeah, be, like, a little cooler to it. Don't, like, play into it so much. Come on. Yeah,
stop leaving this poor man.
It's more on him than her, but, like, she should take some responsibility for it.
Yeah.
At this point, for sure.
Yeah.
And then, more importantly, I think, we get one last moment of brimming sexual tension between Daenerys and Jon.
Wow, if I'm being honest, I'm sad that this is gonna end. I'm here for this right now. I kind of wanted them to make out before he left.
All about that aunt-nephew incest, for sure. But, like, also, yes, they're playing it up in a way where, like, that's definitely what people want, because, like, these are two characters that people like, and, like... They've done a super good job of building that tension.
Oh, for sure.
Like, it's like, super obvious, super but obvious. Not in a way where, like, you're rolling your eyes.
Yeah.
Maybe with the Daenerys almost crying thing would be, like,
that was a little much. But it was, like, it was funny, too. He was like, oh, yeah, you don't have to worry about the King of the North anymore. And she's like, oh, yeah, I was kind of getting used to him.
It's okay. King of the North, not so bad. I don't know. So they leave, and then get... Very quickly up to Eastwatch by the Sea.
Like, super quickly.
Super quick.
And they're kind of just talking with Tormund, and he's like, oh, did you bring more men to help you with this mission? And no.
It's got Gendry and Jorah.
Yeah. Literally the four of them.
But
it's okay.
But they're both, like, main characters, so they count for, like, 1,000 people.
True. Yeah, basically.
So really, we're thinking about it. Like, brought some pretty important reinforcements.
Yeah. And then... I guess, so Torn's like, oh, there's some other people who also wanted to go beyond the wall. So he takes them to some nice, shitty dungeon cell in the back, and we get to see the Brotherhood Without Banners and the Hound again. And I feel like we've kind of been wondering where they went since that
first episode. They talked about the wall, and they talked about kind of
the
Tower by the Sea. So I felt like it was pretty clear if you looked into it, they were going to Eastwatch, but we just didn't see any of that.
The Hound's vision.
It was just like, episode one, gets this vision about Eastwatch, and then episode five, they're at Eastwatch.
They're back.
Which, like, that's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. We kind of, I guess, get even more reunions there, because I feel like everyone in that group is weirdly connected with one another and has seen each other, like, before in past seasons, which was kind of cool, like, in a way.
Yeah.
But they're definitely building it up, so we have all these main characters going beyond the wall.
It's only main characters. It seems
I'm
like
scared.
They sent... John was like, oh, the wildlings go to the wall, and just Tormund went to Eastwatch?
Yeah.
Where are all the other wildlings?
I think, like, I feel like there's got to be more that they're going to bring with them.
I guess, hypothetically, the argument is, like, oh, they're not going to make all these wildlings who, like, wanted to get south of the wall go back north.
Yeah.
So it's just, like, those main guys who are, like, Brotherhood and the Hound are, like, oh, we have to. And then Jon's got, like, Gendry and Jorah with him who, like, want to fight, and Jorah wants to get the white for Daenerys.
Jorah feels really out
of place.
Davos
stays behind.
Yeah.
Also, like, look, I get that Davos isn't, like, an amazing fighter, but he's not that bad.
No,
Davos
he's
playing
not.
Out like
he's
he sucks.
Fought before, right?
Yeah, he's, like, he's not bad.
Like,
yeah.
And with Jon.
Right?
In the Battle of the Bastards.
Yeah.
But so, he kind of, like, did that to himself. He's like, yeah, I'm not much
yeah, no,
I'll
Davos
just
was like,
stay here.
I don't know. You're not that bad, Davos.
Yeah.
Come on. But,
maybe a smart decision.
Yeah.
I like how Tormund, too, was like, oh, did you bring that woman
the
with you?
One.
And I was like, wow. Honestly, he just needs to survive so that can happen.
That's, yeah. He's got a reason to survive. Yeah. I mean, but there was other stuff too. Gendry obviously was sold.
Yeah, by the Brotherhood.
Which I really didn't like happening at the time.
Yeah.
It was just
It's like the same thing. Like, you kind of think they're good guys, but they're actually kind of shitty, you know? They want some money.
Yeah. So he's not thrilled about them being there, and then he is kind of not thrilled when Jon decides to let them out.
Yeah.
I mean, something interesting I noticed also, I guess, I don't know if this is going to be brought up, but Jon and Beric are, like, the two characters we know in the show who have died and come back to life. So I hope it will. I thought that, Sam saving Jorah was going to be brought up when they were still on Dragonstone, so, like, Dany would learn about that, and that wasn't brought up.
No,
so,
that's true.
Like, I don't even think it's been brought up at this point.
Yeah. But I think, too, they've been trying to, even when Dany asked Jon about, like, when Davos said him being stabbed in the heart or whatever.
Oh, that's true.
But I think
true.
He's still trying to keep it, like, a secret, you know, so I think he needs to confide.
That's true, yeah. Well, and he doesn't answer her because that's when Jorah comes when she asks.
Yeah.
So
I think
they
could have, I don't know,
it.
Like, Beric would be helpful to him. Because I think he definitely, like, he's different.
Yeah, he's not the same person after having died. Which I think is an important concept of, like,
you
die and come back, but you're not the same.
Yeah.
I feel like Jon, at this point, is, with the show, is the same having come back.
Yeah.
But they go beyond the wall. They leave Eastwatch after being there in the show for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So this episode was called Eastwatch. Why?
Why? They were playing us. I know they were.
It kind of
seemed
like
everyone was going to get all hype about it, and we did. And
I was like, oh, there's going to be this huge battle, and the Hound's going to fight, and Beric's going to fight. I was really convinced that Beric Dondarrion was going to die in this episode. I named the notes for this podcast, Beric's Gonna Die, before watching the show. I was really convinced.
Oh, yeah.
And there's just nothing. They're barely even at Eastwatch.
Yeah, we barely see him.
What a misleading episode title.
Yeah, it's okay. Next
there's going to be some fighting next episode.
Yeah, I'm ready.
That's all we have in this episode, though. A lot of build-up, I would say.
A lot of build-up. It was them setting things up again, too. Which
I think so. I mean, they had a lot of payoff last episode with the loot train attack, a.k.a., again, the worst name for a battle that you could possibly come up with. But it was, aside from the name, it was pretty awesome, so there was that. As far as the build-up in this episode, it wasn't, like, the worst they've done. There was just not a whole... It was just a build-up and not payoff episode.
Yeah.
So with that being said, I guess let's do ratings. Devin... as the guest,
out of 10
for the episode.
I would give it a 7, you know, solidly above average compared to the earlier episodes in the season. But it really wasn't anything special. It was a lot of setup, as you guys said. But I am really hype for the next episode because of this one.
Yeah. So. I really, like, I hate how we always say similar things, and I really don't want to say a similar thing, but I'm... conflicted with whether to go below or above that, and I literally can't remember what I gave the first few episodes, because I think this is definitely better than those first two.
We gave the first a 6 and the second a 7, both of us did.
Okay, I'll give this one 7.5. And I do feel like it was, even though Game of Thrones usually is kind of like moving around, it was a little disjointed for me. It was moving between a lot of different
things. It jumped a lot. I think we kind of packed it more together by area when we were talking about it, but the episode
was, like,
really jumped around.
Yeah.
In a way that they haven't done in a while.
Yeah, like, it wasn't, like, coherent, like, the same threat. It would be, like, a completely different thing.
Yeah,
so.
And then, like, jumping back, like, pretty quickly sometimes.
Yeah.
And just, like, randomly going around. Which, I mean, if that's, like, we talk a lot about, like, how the show's now doing things differently that maybe we don't like. Like, that's something the show, I think, is better at now, where, like, they're kind of more streamlined and consistent with where they are, whereas earlier in the show, they, like, had a lot more jumping around, where you kind of, like, get, like, a little bit here, a little bit here, and it wasn't as satisfying.
Yeah.
So, but then we had that a little bit in this episode.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit torn between, I was thinking 7 going into it, but then you went 7.5, and you had a pretty good argument where, like, I would say maybe this episode might have been better than the second episode, which I gave a 7.
Mm-hmm.
but I don't feel confident with 7.5. So I'm going to give the super unorthodox 7.25. Because we make up the rules here, so I can give it whatever I want. So 7.25, because I do think it was slightly better than episode 2.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 7.25. That's the average, too, so I'm the most right, because 7, that's the average.
Oh, okay. All right.
That's great.
Sure.
I'm really playing it right here by going last. But yeah, so that's going to bring it to the end of this episode. Only 2 episodes left in the season. Man. Pretty crazy.
Oh,
so sad.
I hate that.
Thank you very much for listening. You can listen to What Is Pod May Never Die and all the other voice podcasts on iTunes. Just search the Voice Podcast Network. You can also listen to it on other podcast platforms that you might use. You can read more from The Voice at georgetownvoice.com, and you can follow The Voice on Twitter at gtownvoice and at halftimegu. Devin, as the guest, anything that you would like to plug for our listeners?
I have no plugs.
No plugs.
Wow.
Support human kindness.
Mm-hmm.
And social justice and all that. That's going to be Devin's message. There you go.
That's good.
So yeah, thanks again for listening, and we will see you next week.